This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hello and welcome into the 24/7 Sports Football Recruiting Podcast. I'm National Recruiting Analyst Cooper Patagno alongside 24/7 Sports Director of Scouting Andrew Ivins. And Drew, we have a heck of a show. Got on Twitter late yesterday. Brian Kelly, it seems like, had stirred the pot a little bit to no fault of his own. Interesting interview with Jacques Doucette, WAFB of Baton Rouge. We'll get to that in a second. And there's some other interesting things going on in the college football recruiting world as well. You remember Sam Hewitt, the former five-star from Seattle, Washington, Kennedy Catholic by way of UW, Cal Poly. Well, guess what? He's in the portal. He'll play his ball at Utah. You got Monty Harrison, the former MLB player now at Arkansas. We'll talk about Washington getting their quarterback, Auburn getting on the board as well. And then we'll get to some viewer questions later in the show. But guys, real quick, every Tuesday and Wednesday, just a reminder, you can find the Oyster Boys right here on the 24/7 Sports YouTube channel. You can also find us on X. And if you have questions, right now is the time to submit them. We'll get to those at the end of the show. But Drew, let's start with that very spicy Brian Kelly take about the transfer portal, and here it is. I'll read it to you here with his interview with Jacques Doucette. We're not in the market of buying players, and unfortunately right now that's what some guys are looking for. They want to be bought, and we're not going to go out and buy players. He also talked about they haven't fared very well, quite frankly, because we're selling something a little differently, and that is we want to recruit, we want to engage, build relationships, develop, retain, have success. Drew, I think context is important here. It's been a very rough spring transfer portal for LSU. You see the transfer portal rankings there, LSU at number 42. Everybody knows it. They're out in the market for a couple of defensive linemen. This is a position that they need to get right. I will start with you. I'm generally just kind of curious because I feel like this thing is kind of maybe spun a little out of control with Brian Kelly's words, but I want to get your just initial feedback to kind of Brian Kelly's interview yesterday.
Number one, I don't know if he's ever going to do an interview like that in that type of setting. I watched the whole thing this morning. It was like 30 minutes. And of course it has been chopped up just one quote. And that quote has been shrunk even more to fit your Instagram graphics about not buying players. I get where he's coming from. My issue, Cooper, and you're the resident LSU expert, if you're going to be about recruiting and player development, well, you haven't done it when it comes to the defensive line the past few years. Like, that is non-existent at LSU, and that's why they're in the position, why they needed to go into the transfer portal to find some veterans to add depth in the trenches. And he said it in that setting, you know, LSU was not good on defense last season. I don't think you need to dig into the stats to figure that out. But if you're going to be this player development program, okay, then go out and get the individuals, right? Coop, you go back to the 2022-2023 cycle, so that's 2 and 3 years ago. LSU signed a total of, by my count, 5 pass rushers. Only 2 of them are still there. You had Deshaun Womack, who played 79 snaps as a true freshman. Jackson Howard, who is now transferred to Minnesota. Dylan Carpenter, who played 1 defensive snap. Those are the 2023 guys. And then in 2022, Quincy Wiggins transfers to Colorado, and Tyghee Hill, who transferred to Oregon State. So, hey, if you want to come out and say we're all about the player development and this is what we're going to do, we're going to get our kind of guys in the building and we're going to coach them up, that's fine. But you haven't done that the past few years. And I'll add this. I know LSU is recruiting very well in the 2025 cycle. We've hyped that recruiting class up since number 3 nationally right now. It's all offensive guys. No defensive linemen committed. And I think they just have 1 pass rusher set to take an official visit here in the month of June, and that's Damian Shanklin out of Indiana.
Pretty interesting. I went both ways on this because it kind of reminded me of my time at Washington with Chris Peterson. He had this OKG philosophy, our kind of guy, and it was very slow and it was very methodical and it went against the grain, and we were going to spend a lot of time investing in the person, and we wanted everything that Brian Kelly wants in Baton Rouge. We wanted guys that wanted to come to the University of Washington for the right reasons. A lot of times that was very difficult to find those combination of players, but when it did happen, you saw guys develop, you know, the Roma Dunzes of the world, the Troy Faitanos, the Leiatu Latu, so on and so forth. Now in this world that we live in, I still feel like that's a very practical approach, but it's a very distorted reality. It's very detached from what is actually transpiring and what's happening in college football. At some point, because of their inefficiencies and inability to recruit the defensive side of the line of scrimmage, LSU is now in the position where they're going to have to react to a very irrational market. All logic goes out the window. You want a player like Dominic Williams, you're going to have to pay a very large number that truly doesn't make a lot of sense. But the need and the demand of the player, that's where it is. LSU is not the only team that needs a player like Dominic Williams. You go look at him and his market, and obviously Oklahoma is willing to step up. But there are a lot of players that are willing to do whatever it takes to land guys like that, that feel like they're one or two players away. And if you're LSU, you can't go into the season, and if you do, with a legitimate team that you think from an offensive standpoint has a chance to compete for a national championship, what does that tell the rest of the roster if you're not willing to invest either on the front end or the back end of the second transfer portal window? And if you're not investing in the December window, which there was a lot more of a market, then this is what happens. It's going to be an oversaturated market where guys are, their value is really going to be a lot more than what they're actually worth. So it's a fascinating situation. I really understand where Brian Kelly is coming from, but the truth is, it's not the reality of the world that they currently live in. And now you're going into a season with, if you look at their two deeps, look at their defensive line and what they have there. You have Deshaun Womack, former five-star, still trying to prove himself. Braden Swinson came over from Oregon. Jalen Lee in the middle. They move over a former offensive lineman to tackle to give him depth. Jacob Gilry, they get the transfer from Wisconsin. This is not the LSU front seven of 2011. It's a far cry from that. And I'm not even saying you have to be that. It's a far cry from what they were in 2019. You just got to be good enough to complement the other side. And coming off of a season where you were statistically the worst defense in all of college football, this is the reality that you face. And the other thing, you know, BK talked about development. You know, Jefferson came over from West Virginia. Mekhi Wingo came over from Missouri, was all freshman of the year. And Mason Smith did not develop. Mason Smith was a five-star that had three different defensive line coaches in 3 or 4 years. And sure, he dealt with his injuries, but that was a guy that had all the ability in the world and still went in the top 64 because of what people think he can be, not because of what he was. You know, and here's the other thing. You don't think Kirby Smart is selling the same thing at Georgia? These guys that have accomplished all these things, guess what? They still have to pay people. If they have a need, they still have to go do it. The player development talks and the Nick Saban discounts, it's out the window. We'd love to all live in that world, but that's just not the reality of the situation. So why I do believe that there's general logic to what he's saying, and I think he's right in saying it, that's the world we want to live in. It's just not the world that college football has become, and it's gotten away from us. And you have to see that, and you have to react to it. So I think LSU is in a very, very difficult situation because I'll say this. Bo Davis is one of the best player development defensive line coaches in the country. In terms of a recruiter, he's not a killer. Right. And people will point to Tavondre Sweat, Byron Murphy. I get it. If you get him the guys, he will get the job done. That's what gets me excited about Dominic McKinley. But if you look at LSU's defensive line board, they got a long way to go, especially in this class. So You're either going to overpay in the spring portal or you're going to nut up front and you're going to pay these guys for what you think they can be. So LSU's got that choice that they got to make. So I don't really know. If this is their logic, I'm a little bit concerned because I think that, you know, they got to wake up and kind of smell the roses here is my opinion.
Well, I don't have an issue with what Brian Kelly, the message he said. And again, I think the quote was kind of twisted and it's taken a life of its own. I'm just saying the high school recruiting is why you're in this position. I don't know where the immediate fix is on the high school recruiting front, but Cooper, let's call this what it is. It's roster management, salary cap management. That is what this is right now. This is like an NFL team. All right, do we want to pay for this free agent or are we just going to roll with what we got? And hopefully, you know, we score enough points on the other side of the ball. That's what this feels like, right? Every time there's NFL free agency, you know, there's teams that are going to overpay for, you know, non-premium positions. Like look at Robert Hunt leaving the Miami Dolphins, going to Carolina, getting all this money. It's like, do you think the Dolphins wanted to pay all that for a guard? Well, Carolina could. And I think it's an interesting stance for LSU. That they weren't going to go for some of these guys. And Chris Hummer and Matt Zenitz, I mean, they kind of raised their hand before this spring window opened up and said, okay, the premium position, what everyone is looking for is those interior defensive linemen. And I think Bud Elliott on the Cover 3 podcast, he brought it up. Hey, there's going to be some guys from some Big Ten schools that are going to enter because they're not happy with their compensation situation. And sure enough, that's exactly what transpired the past few weeks.
I agree with what you said. It's not so much about actually the approach. I think the approach and what he said, there's a lot of substance in it. I can completely understand where he's coming from, but the reality is if you don't jump in, and I'm not saying that, you know, a handful of their targets were the answers. They were obviously after these guys for a reason, but it's a hard line to toe when you're looking at it and you say, well, I got a winnable player here. I got a warm body. That's what the equivalent is. And we need a warm body, but we're paying this guy. We're going to have to pay this guy like he's an all-conference player. That's what I think teams are dealing with. That's what I think LSU is dealing with. I think that's where he's having trouble, maybe kind of wrapping his head around it where, you know, there might be players on his team that are not compensated in the way that he thinks they should be compensated. But yeah, we're going to go out and give it to a one-year rental, but it doesn't take away from the fact that you're going into the season where, hey, your defensive line is not going to be good enough to compete for a national championship.
And they open up against USC. Coop heard from a G5 personnel person yesterday. They had let a interior D lineman walk. Guy was repping with the twos and threes during spring camp. Let him walk. That player ended up transferring to a conference rival and was being courted by an ACC program, had an official visit set up. And that Group of Five program could not believe that was the type of market out there. I've heard from some different schools, you know, a lot of programs tried to upgrade the back end of the roster in this spring window, but the player pools that entered was a lot of, you know, a lot of garbage from other programs. I think some schools are going to approach this spring window a little bit differently. I'm not saying that's the case here with LSU, but just trying to add some context on what that, you know, interior defensive lineman market is. I also wrote down, like, Malik Autry, you know, we want to talk about LSU D-line recruiting. Like, how are the Tigers not involved with a guy like that, you know? A big body in the middle, a guy that's in the top 64 for us. Obviously, he's committed to Auburn, but he's looking around, taking some visits. Like, it feels like when LSU had things really rocking and rolling, you know, they have a seat at the table for a prospect like that.
Well, it's been a couple years since it's felt like that, you know, at the linebacker position too, you know.
And they got Dom McKinley last cycle. That was a big flip on New Year's Eve. I mean, don't get me wrong. We like him a lot, but I think he's not someone that's going to step in and be able to play right away, especially if Deshaun Womack was, you know, getting 17 snaps in a bowl game when, you know, the roster is depleted. I think that says a lot.
Dom McKinley might have to play. That's where they are. And ideally, Dom McKinley would be a guy that you redshirt, right? And a guy that you want to sit and you want to develop and you want to build his confidence. But I mean, you go down the board, I went through it today. You know, you can go past Malik Autry, one of our top interior defenders. Who else are they involved in the top 247? Right. Yeah. There's some guys there, but it's going to be interesting for Bo Davis, the rest of the crew.
I do think you know, digging into this 25 cycle, I don't think there's a ton of those bodies, right? And there's none in Louisiana. I think that's the other thing to note as well. I mean, LSU is recruiting really well in the boot right now in terms of the top 10 ranked prospects. I don't know how many are committed, but it's not like there's, you know, an obvious fast break dunk for them when it comes to an interior pass rusher.
I'm going to bring up, this is the good part about the show, and this is a good thing that we can attend to, but Harrison, we appreciate you jumping on with us. He asked, why would a five-star guy be a guy that you would redshirt for LSU? And that's a good question. I think circumstantial, LSU is probably going to have to play Dominic McKinley because of what we've talked about with that defensive line group and kind of how it looks right now. Dominic McKinley is a guy that needs reps, like similar to Mason Smith. Mason Smith, you kind of saw him as a freshman. He was ready to play. He was a big physical frame. Dominic McKinley, sure, he should be able to give you something as a freshman, but you should, in all honesty, looking at him and his timeline and his growth development in terms of the technical development as well, this is a guy that still needs a lot of coaching. And physically, yes, he has the physical traits that you get excited about, but he needs time. Just because guys are five stars does not mean that they're immediately ready to contribute at the highest level. And you're talking about a developmental position at defensive line. So when it comes to the case of Dominic McKinley, that's why, at least in my opinion, it's important that these guys kind of develop in their own timeline. But because of the circumstance of that room, he's probably going to have to play a lot earlier than he's ready to go.
Well, I thought with Dom, remember, we got him at the Under Armour game, you know, last kind of evaluation before he signed. And again, he flipped, what was it, New Year's Eve as the fireworks were going off. He surprised us, right? He was kind of like a guy on the fringe. All right, what are we going to do? You know, he had his moments in the one-on-ones. I thought, you know, he is soft-spoken, but he's got a, I don't know, he's got like some fire in him. Like you can't see that on tape. Is I guess what I would say, but you know, it's hard for those interior defensive line. Like, you know, when's the last freshman D tackle, you know, started for year one? I can't
people,
even think of
it. I mean, people would probably, you know, talk about Reuben Bain and
but he
and
was Peter in an Woods. Edge role.
Both those guys kind of have interior ability, but yes, if you're talking about the 300-pound, you know, one technique, right? Yeah. That's a little bit different there. Maybe Jaheim Otis, right? And it wasn't even, it was kind of in a serviceable role, right? More contributions than it was a full-time starter. So guys, for more LSU coverage, our guys over there are doing a fantastic job. Bryce Kuhn, Sonny Shipp, make sure to visit go247.com for the latest on Tigers and all LSU recruiting. Excited about the work they're doing. I'm jumping on a podcast with Bryce tomorrow. So going to be a lot more, I'm sure. They've been jam-packed since the Brian Kelly interview, Jacques Doucette interview as well.
It was a very bright, shining light, Sarajevo, and they needed to kill that light.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2.
U2, they represent a personification of our resistance.
The Hollywood Reporter hails Kiss the Future, moving and inspirational.
Kiss the Future! Viva Sarajevo!
Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to Paramount Plus to try it free. Terms apply.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
All right, Drew. Some more happened from Tuesday to Wednesday. I did not expect to wake up and kind of see a transaction wire full of just kind of interesting names. But let's start with the former five-star Sam Huart, guy that I'm very familiar with, son of Damon Huart. He is the number 84 quarterback in the portal. He's a number 23 player in 2021. He commits to Utah after a quick stint at Cal Poly. Remember, he signed with Washington coming out. Michael Penix came over, kind of threw him off a little bit in terms of his timeline, what his future looked at UW. He now ends up at Utah. Remember, Cam Rising is back for his seventh year. So that room looking Pretty interesting. Got Isaac Wilson there as well, another scholarship quarterback. So, Sam Hewitt, your thoughts on this one? We hadn't heard this name in a while.
All right, here's my immediate thought. Has there been a quarterback that has transferred down, found success, and then transferred back up? I wrote down some names, but I don't think any of these people really qualify. You had Hank Bachmeyer. He was at Boise, went to Louisiana Tech. Now he's at Wake Forest. DJU, Clemson, Oregon State, now at Florida State. Casey Thompson, Texas, Nebraska, was doing good at FAU last season, blew out his knee. Now he's at Oklahoma, but he's kind of just like a backup. Ben Bryant, Cincinnati, Eastern Michigan, Cincinnati, Northwestern. I don't know. This is just like the first one of these with the three-time transfer rule. We're having a guy who didn't work out at stop one, goes somewhere else, finds success at Cal Poly. I believe he set some single-season passing records there. Now he's going to Utah, and he could be the Utes starter in 2025.
What I think is interesting about this one is, you know, if you know anything about Sam Hewitt, Sam Hewitt played in the air raid offense, Kennedy Catholic. We recruited him when I was at UW. Great family. The Hewitts wired the right way. It was pretty interesting. You know, he signed up to play for Chris Peterson. Chris Peterson ends up retiring out of the blue. He gets Jimmy Lake. All of a sudden, he's thrown into a 12-13 personnel offense playing under center. And people wonder, all right, well, how do you stint the growth of a young quarterback? Well, you know, between coordinator changes and scheme changes, that will do the job. So he gets back with his high school coach, Sheldon Cross at Cal Poly, who's an OC there, and does some good things. But it's not like he's going into this very pass-happy offense at Utah. He's going back into 11, 12 personnel type of offense under center with Cam Rising that has relied a lot on Cam's legs and then the play-action offense as well. So I find it pretty fascinating, that marriage. But I like the fit. I mean, just knowing Sam personally, he kind of fits with a Kyle Whittingham type of program, type of style, personality-wise. And, you know, the biggest thing, he's got another year. I think that's important. He's played some ball. He's got some experience. But now he's got a year to reacclimate to playing at a high level in the Big 12. And then we'll see what happens. I think Isaac Wilson had a pretty good spring game, right? There's some buzz around him. So him going into year two as well, I think it's a good, healthy outlook for Utah's quarterback situation.
Call your shot. Isaac Wilson, Sam Hewitt, who's taking snap one for the Utes. I went and looked to see like who they open up the 2025 season against. They have like one out-of-conference game scheduled at Wyoming. I thought that was a little interesting.
I'm gonna go Isaac Wilson. But I think he's a really, really good fit in that Ludwig offense.
Okay. I was gonna say, I mean, he played in a kind of wide open air raid attack there.
He did. But just in terms of the mobility playing out on the perimeter, I think he's got kind of more of that point guard mentality. I think give you more in the run game too.
All right. And then is Sam Heward the first of his kind? Are we going to get some more of these, you know, transfer down back up quarterbacks?
No, I don't think so at all.
What? I think we could see more of this. High profile guy goes somewhere.
I'm sorry, I should rephrase. Yes, I agree with you. I don't think this is going to be the last of what we just saw. Yeah. So, all right, you ready for this story? Monty Harrison? How about that? I was reading up on it this morning. Pretty crazy. Former MLB player, four-star receiver in 2014, a decade ago. He is 28 years old. I think he had like a $1.9 million signing bonus, was drafted in the second round in the MLB. He's been bouncing around AAA affiliates, spent some time in the league in the MLB. Now decides to come back to football. And, you know, Arkansas doesn't have to put him on scholarship. He's going to walk on at Arkansas for Sam Pittman and Bobby Petrino. Pretty interesting. I don't think they were the only teams sniffing around him either, Drew.
I think Nebraska was also involved there. This is a fun story. I don't know if Monty Harrison's going to play. I mean, he's 28 years old. He was in the same recruiting class. I went and looked, and it was like a bunch of guys that had played in the NFL and are like no longer in the NFL. I think the only like active 2014 receivers I came across were Deebo Samuel and Braxton Berrios. I think Braxton Berrios is still in the league. I should make a honorary spot on the freaks list. Have you seen some of those baseball plays he makes? He's like climbing walls, throwing guys out. I mean, he is athletic now. I don't know what being away from the game for over 10 years, right? I don't know what to make of this. It seems kind of like a gimmick. I mean, is he going to make an impact? I have no idea.
You wonder. I mean, it's not like this guy is, you know, he's been in the MLB, right? I mean, so physically, you know, you expect him to kind of be in shape. How does that translate to a guy that has not run routes in 10 years? I don't know. But it's going to be interesting nonetheless. Like if he does end up being a guy that can crack the rotation for Arkansas, it's definitely going to be a story that you know is just going to continue to explode throughout the college football season.
Kind of along these lines, what about that question? You could take 30 guys from the NBA and put them in the NFL, but you can't take 30 guys in the NFL and put them in the NBA. Do you agree with that? I subscribe. I echo that stance.
So you're with Austin Rivers on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, JJ Watt came out. I think the physicality is different. Like you look at the body types. I mean, imagine if you had Zion Williamson as a five technique, right? It just depends in terms of if you're asking those guys to do that today versus when they had the decision with the fork in the road to make that decision, whether they're going to play football or whether they're going to play basketball. I think that's a different story.
Okay.
But Drew, you and I and the rest of the team, I mean, we've been looking at some legitimate hoopers as of lately. And I do think, yes, it is more difficult for a football player to play in the NBA than vice versa. But I mean, there's some guys out there that, you know, Drake London, maybe, you know, it was supposed to play for USC, Kendre Harrison in the class of 2025 or 2026. There's some guys out there, maybe one or two a cycle, I think, you know, but the numbers are a lot lower.
I think the question, you're right, you know, like starter in the NFL, I don't know about that, but you're going to get on a roster just based on a measurable standpoint. I don't think people realize how big some of those NBA guys are.
If you had one guy to bet on coming over from the NFL to go play basketball, who would it be?
From the NFL to go play basketball. I don't know. Do you have one?
I would say primetime Jimmy Graham. I mean, he could probably give you some backup minutes at the four, you know. And he played basketball at Miami, right? So that's an easy one.
Yeah, I don't have one. Let me marinate on that.
I mean, the best two sporters in my mind would have been Julius Peppers and Tony Gonzalez. I think both those guys, you know, were legit. And then Antonio Gates as well. It's always the tight ends. You know, those type of profiles. But anyway, let's keep it moving. Washington. I mean, least surprised about this fit, maybe one of my favorite fits. You and I have not talked much about this kid, but what do you think? Kenny McMillan, number 39 quarterback in the country from Hawaii. He commits to Washington on Monday. And like, it's like you turn on the tape and it's like, oh, that's Noah Fafita. You know, that's immediately kind of what comes to mind. Now he's 5'10". He's a total gamer. The tape pops. How about this? 10.25-inch hands. And when you watch the tape, you're like, okay, something's different because the command over the ball is pretty elite for somebody his size.
Coop, I didn't have to watch the tape. Saw it with my own two eyes at the Elite 11 in Columbus. Right. I call him a flamethrower. I woke up this morning on the way to the gym, you know, 5:30, and checking commitments that went down when I was sleeping, and I was like, let's go. Love the fit because he is kind of like Noah Fafita. He's from Gatorade Player of the Year in Hawaii. He throws a decisive and confident football. I mean, the Elite 11 coaches were just raving about his performance. He was there in Ohio. I don't know why he was there. I asked him, and he couldn't even tell me how long the flight was to get there. But he came out, he showed out alongside Tavian St. Clair. And I think for that Washington staff that had Noah Fafita, they needed to get this guy in the boat. And then how about the quarterback room there? I mean, man, has there been more turnover anywhere else with a position group in the country? there at Washington. Austin Mack leaves. Demetrius Davis or Demarcus Davis, he transfers to UCLA. Damon Williams follows that Arizona staff there to Washington. They got Will Rogers, who has started 40 games when he was at Mississippi State. He's got 1 year, but they got no other scholarship quarterbacks after that. And now they got two high schoolers committed because they also have Dash Beerley. I love the fit. I'm excited to see this kid play on Saturdays. I don't know about the Sunday potential, but he's got a flamethrower. That's what I call him. He's the Hawaiian flamethrower for an arm.
I mean, they're going to be like a total pain in the ass in the Big Ten to defend. I mean, you think about kind of what they're doing over there, and you think about Noah Fifita, and obviously they got to find their version of Tatoria McMillan there in Seattle as well. But those three guys could be any more similar, right? I mean, I feel like every cycle they've just done a tremendous job finding those guys that kind of fit their system, the point guard that can extend plays. You know, we throw the gamer tag on there. But these guys, just in terms of their ability to extend and the, I would say, the spontaneous genius that they play with is pretty special. And now you got Damon Williams, you got McMillan. And the beautiful thing about that, we've seen this with Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, there's continuity in terms of depth, right, based on play style. Imagine going from Will Rogers to Damon Williams to Demarcius Davis. And think of how different those guys are from a skill set standpoint. As a play caller, it's a lot different in terms of how you have to call that game. Now, when you go from Damon Williams to Kenny McMillan, the continuity there, I think, is something that you can appreciate as well. And certainly Jed Fish can appreciate. So we love that fit. Drew, Tristan Haynes off the board to Oklahoma on Monday, top 247 corner, number 12 corner in the country. A guy that I've done a little bit of work on, but it's easy to see why we like him, right? 6'2", 175 pounds, two-way prospect, over 1,000 yards receiving, pretty natural, long strider, and pretty fluid just in terms of getting in and out of his breaks, and a lot of ball production there. If you were to just look at that, there's a lot to like. Then you add in the track and field, 21 foot plus, I think 21.7 in the long jump, right? Explosive kid. Nice pickup for Brent Venables.
It is. We just invited Tristan Haynes to the All-American Bowl, so you're going to get a chance to evaluate and study him even further January in San Antonio. Type of guy that I think the Sooners need to keep finding and coveting. Right now they're sitting with the number 4 ranked recruiting class. He's only the third top 247 guy to jump in the boat. They also got Ryan Foji, offensive tackle out of the Lone Star State, who is also in the All-American Bowl. We like him a lot. And then Elijah Thomas, the wide receiver. But guy, I think you can play on the outside. And, you know, as we go through these corners, obviously they are so invaluable and they are held in high praise when it comes to the NFL side of things. I mean, these are guys you want to push up the board. So love this pickup. It seemed like Notre Dame was heavily involved with Tristan Haynes throughout the process. I think Tom Loy came on here at some point and brought that up, but it's the Sooners that went out. You know, you got to get the best guys in your state in the backyard there, I think, if you're Oklahoma, and he's the number 3 ranked prospect in the state for them.
Are you ready to talk about Auburn? Auburn, who now has the number 10 ranked recruiting class in the country. We talked about them last year, I think, pound for pound, one of our most favorite classes that we saw. And Hugh Freeze and his team kind of picking up right where they left off. They pick up Tyler Lockhart out of Winona, Mississippi, top 150 linebacker, number 16 backer in the country. Pretty intriguing guy, Drew. I think for us was, you know, a guy that we're more wait and see mode. He came out to Nashville in April, had a really good combine there in Tennessee. Long, rangy, kind of see ball, get ball type of player, but plays extremely fast. Love him at the second level. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to, he's going to need a little bit of seasoning, right? Going to need some polish, but just in terms of the physical traits, ran, you know, mid 4.6s, but a lot to like there out of this kid. I kind of like him, and I was kind of surprised that he was leaving the Magnolia State. And that's another really nice pickup for Auburn.
That's the theme of their class, man. We talked so much last cycle about what they did with those wide receivers, Walker White, the quarterback that's going to be there. But the defense, Malik Autry touched on him when we were talking about LSU. They got Caleb Falk, Jordan Crawford, Devin Williams, another corner we like. I think Auburn, what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball is something to keep an eye on, because they did it last cycle and they did it in Hugh Freeze's first kind of transition class there. Tyler Lockhart, like the athlete, he's got a ways to go, but you're going to bet on those traits. Believe he's also a high jumper, you know, does some of the jumps in the track and field. And you're right, just with where Ole Miss is and where they could be come season's end, potential, you know, college football playoff spot, you would think this is a guy that they didn't want to slip over state borders. And then Mississippi State as well had sunk their teeth into Tyler Lockhart. So big win for Auburn.
Yeah, I don't think Mississippi State's going anywhere there. Auburn seems like they got urgency to them, right? Everything they're doing seems intentional. I like the way they're recruiting. They're a team to watch. Drew, before we take questions, and just a reminder, if you have questions, right now is the time to put it in the chat. You're in the chat for a reason. It's 11:42 a.m. on a Wednesday. You know you should be working, but if you're in here, you might as well be asking some questions. So make sure to fire some questions in there. I was just thinking about, you know, what we were talking about earlier with Brian Kelly and LSU. What it kind of reminds me of is we saw Ohio State go through this lull, right, in terms of recruiting in the NIL era. And it was guys like Justin Scott that kind of came to mind. It was guys like John Walker, guys that they've had a lot of success with in the past, maybe pre-NIL era. And it kind of stunned Ohio State a little bit. And they've lost three straight consecutive matchups to Michigan as well. That certainly stings. Ohio State rebounded in a big way. They got it together, and they got it together quick from a NIL and collective standpoint. And that type of like traditional recruiting and that type of, well, we're going to find the right guys, they adapted. They said that is not the world that we live in anymore. And then you've seen them be really, really aggressive with trying to build one of the best rosters in college football. Not to say that they weren't doing that before, but you've seen them go out and do some things that make you really encouraged about the future of college football. I think LSU is in that moment right now. I think Brian Kelly's coming off of 20 wins in his last two seasons. I think every LSU fan is excited about that. And if you were to ask me where LSU stands again, going into next year, I think they're in a pretty similar spot. That being said, the goal at LSU is to win national championships. So I think this is going to really kind of be the first domino that falls to where, yeah, Brian Kelly's going to be given the leeway to go into next season and say, all right, do it the way that you want to do it. But if this is a problem again for a third straight season, then we're going back to the drawing board and we're going to have to recalibrate from the top down. It's going to be everybody involved. It's going to be a Brian Kelly, Scott Woodward, anybody you can imagine, Tiger Athletic Foundation down there in Baton Rouge as well. So I think LSU's in that moment because, you know, the thing that I brought up earlier is like, yeah, you might not like it. You might not want to take a swing, but if you don't take a swing, what do you have? You don't have it. You really don't have anything, right? So, just my thoughts on that. I think every team's kind of going through their, I don't want to call it a grieving process, but realization process of the game's changed. And whatever we thought it was, we got to let go of that and we got to adapt or we're just going to get left behind.
Are there any schools you think that have kind of figured it out?
The whole
besides, NIL deal? Yeah, like you mentioned Ohio State, or maybe they aren't getting enough credit for kind of getting everything in line.
It's interesting. Let me think on that a little bit. Like, yeah, there's certainly programs that like some more than others.
A school that jumps out to me like Missouri. I mean, it seems like they just keep adding, you know, nice pieces via the transfer portal. I don't know if that bubble is ever going to burst. But it's just like veteran after veteran, and then they find success with them.
I think Florida State's been really good. You know, I still think I think what teams are trying to do, they're trying to find a way that they can still be measured and tactful without being irresponsible. The hard part is, you know, logic goes out the window when you got some needy teams that set the market on fire. And you could say, well, I'll be willing to pay this player X, but team Y comes out there and it's It doesn't make any logical sense. And I think that's the issue. You got logical people that are probably looking at this through a very finite lens, that personality-wise, it's hard for them to kind of justify paying or shelling out that type of money to a player that they don't feel, you know, really qualifies for that type of demand. So, yeah, I don't know. I look at, let's see, we'll go conference by conference. I think Florida State's doing a good job. NC State's a team. Obviously, Miami, right? Miami's one of those teams that I think they're a total disruptor in the market, right? SMU. Now I'm just kind of talking about teams that are more active. You know, Big 12, I'm not really sure. You don't hear a lot of banging the drum. UCF. You know, but Tennessee has been a team that's caught my eye. I feel like Tennessee's been opportunistic, right? I think A&M kind of in the same way. And certainly Ole Miss. And I think Mississippi State, the best thing that's happened to Mississippi State is Ole Miss getting going, right? Because it's kind of, for a new coach like Jeff Levy, I think that's a good thing. And I think LSU is in figure it out mode. And I think Florida's come a long way since Jaden Rashada. So you could go down the list. Oregon, to me, you know, has done a tremendous job, but yeah.
I just think where we're going, it's going to be so important to have a quarterback on a team-friendly deal. I mean, you're going to have to choose where you put your pieces. You know, you want the first year starter that is exceeding expectations. It's going to allow you, because just you're not having to pony up for him yet.
I'd rather get the defensive lineman right the first time around. If I was LSU or any other team, this window for a defensive lineman would have to be the absolute last resort. This is not where I want to live. I mean, like I said, it is a oversaturated market where you got guys getting paid two or three times what they're actually worth. So give me the option to invest in a guy like LJ McCray and give me the right of first refusal to negotiate the second deal. That's kind of the way that I see it. It's rather than go into the market and try to find that guy, which would just be impossible.
It's like signing a first round pick or selecting a guy in the first round or trying to find him in free agency.
For sure. All right, Drew, you ready for some questions?
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. Canes Cats, Heats 305. You're an alumni. You're an Oyster Boys alumni. You're in the group now. Questions every day. He says, question to both, two-part. How many more rankings updates will there be, and when will they be exactly? Also, if Andrew knows these three players in ninth grade. Sorry, Drew, I didn't read this all the way through. Steve Moore, Namie Lawrence, and Quiberius Lines. Why don't we just stick with the first, and you can give context on the second part of the question if you know it. Next rankings update, what, Drew? End of the month?
Yep. We are updating 2025 this month. We're going to get back in next month following the Elite 11 finals, excuse me. Then we'll jump back in mid-season, update before the early signing period, and then an update finalizing things after the All-Star game. So after that Polynesian Bowl. So what is that, four or five updates? I don't know. And we're constantly making changes, right? You know, handing out 4 stars, 3-star bumps, whatnot. Usually those are highlighted in the weekly rankings notes. I think we're as dialed in as ever, Cooper, right now when it comes to the guys outside the top 247, like Tristan, Kenny McMillan, who committed to Washington, like saw him in person, moved him up in the rankings, bam, committed to Washington. Like, I don't know if 2-3 years ago, you know, we were that progressive in terms of making moves with some of those guys on the outside. As for these ninth grade quarterbacks, the only name I recognize is Naeem Lawrence. I know he's at Ransom Everglades and he has transferred. Seen him on the 7-on-7 circuit, but have not admittedly dug in that much. A lot going on.
Yeah, a couple more updates left. And, you know, to Andrew's point, he deserves all the credit for this, but I do think our process – top 247 has always been solid and has continued to improve. I think where we're really proud is that 3-star ranking grade. We've gotten a lot better. Just monitoring those guys, making sure those guys are, one, being seen, two, You know, if we need to elevate their profile, those changes are being made before their senior season as well. Okay, next question from Corey Williams. Corey, good to see you. He says, do y'all think Colby Young will have a big year for UGA this season? I think so. I mean, you look at Georgia's receiving core. You got Dominic Lovett, Ra-Ra Thomas, Dylan Bell, London Humphreys, Michael Jackson, Nitro Tuggle, the freshman. Kind of an interesting cast of characters there.
That's a lot of transfers, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, Lovett was a transfer. Thomas was a transfer. Colby Young transfers in this year. Humphreys, another transfer. Michael Jackson, a transfer. That's just been the one position where I feel like they've been able to kind of patch it together and figure it out. But it hasn't been so much through the high school ranks.
Well, that's why I said on Tuesday's show, like the Taylen Taylor, that potential marriage kind of fires me up just because they haven't been able to figure out that room. I would assume so on Colby Young. I don't know if you've heard anything out of Athens, but I've read the practice reports, and it seems like he's going to be potentially the guy.
I mean, I'll just, you know, I think Carson Beck continues his trajectory from last season. I think it's pretty safe to say will be one of the top quarterbacks off the board in a likely first-round draft pick. You know, you think about the quarterback situation last year. I mean, it was Van Dyke, Emory Jones, lack of continuity there. Every time I watched Colby Young, I was very impressed just with the ball skills, run after catch ability. I think he'll thrive, and I think that's a receiving core in Athens that's still trying to find an identity. And I think, you know, Dylan Bell kind of has his role. I think London Humphreys, in terms of what he can do from a vertical standpoint, will have his role. Michael Jackson, a lot of experience there, will provide depth. So you look at a guy like Colby Young and Ra-Ra Thomas, I think those two guys as ex-receivers are going to have plenty of opportunities. So, yeah, no, I'm very excited for Colby Young. All right, Drew, last one here. I'll kind of rephrase it for you. But Rod Smith asks, Jeremiah McLeod, I guess we'll just – he wants to know why he's ranked where he's ranked. But just your overall thoughts on McLeod.
Go Gators. Rated so low. I love that terminology, man. No one's ever ranked high enough. It's always so low. MVP of the Under Armour camp in Orlando there. You know, initially the numbers we had on him, all right, he's 6'5", comes in at 6'3", I think 280 on the dot. Here's some stories, transfers around high schools. Now he's at Gadsden County, which is produced. Daryl Jackson, Joshua Farmer, both those guys now at Florida State. I like the tape. Want to see more of him as a senior. We have him as an 87, right? So that technically is a UDFA grade on him for us. I think it's a good flip for Florida. And I will add, you know, as we've dug more into this IDL group, I said it a little earlier on the show, I don't think it's as deep as we thought. And I think that could also push him up the board. But I like that commit for Florida. I'll give you another one, Cooper. I like the running back they got committed, Waltez Clark. I think me and you kind of went back and forth on him before. I wrote him up last night. Waltez Clark, top 247 running back out of Tampa Plant. Multifaceted athlete. I kind of like him at linebacker, but I know the Gators want to use him at running back. So I'm interested to see what they can get done and here in June in terms of getting guys in the boat. It's a small class right now, but there are some parts I like. Jeremiah McLeod is one of them.
Did not expect you to say that about Waltez. I was kind of a Waltez Clark fanboy, was I?
Yeah. I mean, what's the beauty of Next Gen is that you can just go in and just read everyone's notes. And
I'm looking at mine right now. That was from January. But there was definitely some redeeming qualities with him. He's a big back. You know, 10.99.
He's gone faster than that.
It just more of like an incomplete evaluation, I felt like, last time I watched him. You know,
he's only ran for over 100 yards in 3 games, but he catches the ball out of the backfield.
I know you're a big fan of that.
He's one of the more unique watches in the cycle, I think.
All right, final thoughts for today. You good?
I'm good, man. I am good.
Looking forward to it. Drew. Well deserved, just kind of like a laid back weekend coming up, right?
Oh yeah, Mother's Day.
Let's go. From the Oyster Boys. Tell all your mothers out there happy Mother's Day from Drew and I. Make sure to enjoy. I'll be in Charlotte for Mother's Day doing the Lord's work out there at the UA Combine. We're very excited about that. But guys, for Andrew Ivins, I'm Cooper Patagna. Also, make sure to see us every Tuesday, Wednesday. Lock in to the 24/7 Sports YouTube channel. You can also find us on X. And if you will, please just go like and subscribe. So for Drew, I'm Cooper Patagna. We'll see you next week. Thanks for watching.
CBS Tonight, after The Equalizer.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
It's the season finale.
Everyone's looking for something.
Of Tracker.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker, CBS season finale tonight after The Equalizer on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.